Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host Curtis and my co-host Aaliyah, and we are here today with Peter DeRena, who is a band manager, and he's also in Seven Spires. He's going to be here today to talk with us for the next 40 minutes or so about different aspects of band management and other stuff. So first of all, thank you, Peter, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's nice to meet you guys and to be able to talk.
Cool. So for the first question, over to Aaliyah.
All right. So, Peter, for our listeners who may be living under a rock and don't know who you are, would you give us a brief summary, nutshell version of who you are and what you do in the realms of metal?
Yeah, sure. my life's work is really as a bass player. When I was a teenager, I discovered metal and really just connected with the bass because that was an instrument that nobody else played. And about a year into that, I really decided that, okay, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And I'm lucky to have that be such a certain thing. So I'm an upright bass player, an electric bass player. I went to Berkeley as an upright bass principal. And so a lot of the stuff that I've been doing for the past 7, 8, 9 years is, freelance musician work. For live recording sessions on jazz albums, on Latin music albums, anything, in addition to metal, of course. And so I balance the electric and upright bass quite heavily, and that's been something that I do quite a lot. Throughout that time, of course, like being in a band, and especially a band in the metal industry, my first year of college, we were looking at record label agreements. We were looking at a lot of stuff on the business end. So I decided to also get a major in music business. So that's something that once live touring, live performance, a lot of the things that are essential to musicians, once all that stuff started to really get heavily affected in early 2020, I decided, okay, well, let me play to the other side of my skills and start to begin managing bands. And start to work on that side, not just for Spires, but for other bands as well, and other artists. And so that's mostly what I do.
I have a quick follow-up to that. So you are full-time just in the management / musician.
Yeah, right. Yeah, cool. Exactly. I am my own boss in every way, and I'm very grateful for that. I do two things that I love. So
how long have you been doing it full-time without having to do anything else?
Well, I've been a professional musician, luckily, since I was in high school. It's been my only source of income, really, is freelance musician work, and then adding the management stuff on in 2020 has helped it be a lot more sustainable.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. And then, what do you wish you'd known before you started to manage your own band?
With Spires, I figured out a lot of stuff along the way, and I'm very lucky to have them, and we're all very lucky to have each other, because the thing about that band is that, I didn't consider myself a manager, and in a lot of ways still don't, because we all have such an influential aspect in the day-to-day workings of the band and a lot of the decision-making taking place. So, I guess there's not too much that I wish I knew on that front, because it's very much something that you learn as you go. And given, your discipline, your personality type, and some of the inherent skills, you can kind of really carry that very well. On the musician end of things, though, I wish that I practiced more in high school. And I still wish that I had more time to practice. So,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, never enough time. So can you speak a little bit to why Seven Spires went right into another album after Emerald Seas?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, this is actually a point that really frustrated us, throughout 2020 and that sort of thing. In 2018 and 2019, we did a lot of self-booked headliners through North America. So we would book ourselves, headliner shows through Canada and most of the United States. And we were really expecting to be able to tour Emerald Seas at a much higher level. We started seeing these really professional level tour offers come through. We had announced this Insomnium run. We had announced an Amaranth run as well. And so what ended up happening is we were planning on touring Emerald Seas heavily with these two things and then planning on working on the new album after that. And what ended up happening was that we just we totally did not have that as a possibility. So instead, we spent about a month being sad, and the label contacted us and said, are you guys working on a new album? Because we can give you a release date now and we can really, start that process. So we were really grateful for that, because as a band, there are songs that we have so many song seeds and so many songs in various stages of completion pretty much all the time. So to have this opportunity and to sort of have a very direct mission as soon as a month after all of the shutdowns and everything was a gift.
Yeah, it's something that I think I used it in a discussion I was having the other day as an example of how people should just focus on the things that they can control instead of letting the circumstances around them defeat them. But I thought it was really admirable and very cool that you guys did that. You just sort of rerouted and did something else.
Hmm.
Even despite the fact that it must have been really disappointing. So
yeah, of course. But that's something that was shared by the whole industry and something that we all felt together. So, so that was good. And energy is a precious resource. So directing it in the right place is a good thing.
Amen. You mentioned this in another interview, so I wanted to follow up on it. You mentioned that it's not ideal for someone in a band to manage their own band by themselves. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, so there are a couple points there. I think the main thing is that maintaining objectivity is a huge part of managing a band. There needs to be somebody who's not vested in, the actual artistry of the band and that sort of thing. And I think that's really the key point, is that, having people that can lend an opinion that isn't influenced from a, passionate heart and soul kind of, this is my life's work thing. And that's why we have other members of the Spires management team that are in there as well, is because, I have to, at the end of the day, I have to focus on my primary jobs, which are, the backing vocals and the bass. For the performances and, working on the bass parts and that sort of thing. And also that objectivity is essential.
So just as a follow-up before I get into the next, I guess this is kind of part of the next question, so I'm just going to ask it. So what are the top three things that bands should get a handle on to self-manage successfully?
Yeah, okay. I guess the top three things are organization. So, I like to use the term collective consciousness a lot. What I think is something that that we Inspires take a lot of pride in is the fact that one of us is capable of speaking for all of us in any negotiation or meeting setting, anything like that, because we meet weekly, regardless of what's going on. And we all talk about any matters that are a week away, a month away, 6 months away, or a year away. And so we're constantly updating and touching base on these different points. And if any of us has to bring this out into the public or to some other person or something like that, we're actually able to all really stay on the same page with that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is kind of along those lines, which is communication internally. So despite the fact that a band is supposed to, you're all supposed to be friends and everything's supposed to be really great all the time, you do have to go through things, and it's going to be more like a family at the end of the day, where you have to face not only the great things and the successes and the friendship, homey aspects, but also the really difficult stuff. You'll be there for each other's personal things, and you'll share a lot of professional difficulties and successes together. So communicating not only the things that are important for the business, but for yourself as a human, are really important. And then other than that, I would say it takes a lot of time and research to figure stuff out. And letting things be experiential in your learning is essential, but also making sure that everybody has the spare time to be strategic and to do research and to, you know, sort of just to have that space, you know, for growth. So those are some things that I think are really essential in starting up.
I want to do one quick follow-up before Aaliyah goes on the next question. So you mentioned about being friends while still having the business aspect. How do you kind of maintain the friendship while keeping the business going, out of curiosity?
Well, just with a common understanding, you know, it's never been that hard for us. And that's again, because, you know, we're all very business minded and we know and love what we're doing. And we know and love each other, you know? So I think that that it's not really that difficult, but knowing where the line is of, you know, this is a business discussion versus this is a friendship discussion, we'll maybe talk about some of the things that we have to talk about first. And then as soon as that's done, you know, somebody will read the other person's face and then we'll start to go on to the personal aspects of it and everything. And you know, and that's how that stuff is handled. And I think it's a really important aspect of communication, you know.
Yeah. One question that I wanted to kind of go out into is, like, why did you decide to branch out into managing other bands other than just your own?
Mm-hmm. Well, so like I said, in 2020, you know, it wasn't just the tours that were canceled. I had most of my private students, which were maybe 20, 25 students, most of them canceled or went remote. And then if you go remote, you know, a lot of the times, like, it doesn't, for a lot of people, like, I only teach remote lessons now. But at the time, I mean, for a lot of people that I was doing in person with, that changed. A lot of the live session studio work with either orchestras or, you know, small ensembles and stuff like that, out the window. Any of the weekly gigs that I would do, that kind of thing, out the window. So I was looking at, you know, me trying to save and you know, pay my expenses and everything pretty much the same way. But I just couldn't support myself. And so, you know, one of the things that you have to do, whether you're in any kind of freelancing career, is to say, all right, how can I turn my skills into something that I can offer to other people? And at the same time, in the music industry in general, I think that there are a lot of questions that people have, and a lot of things that, Even going through the Berklee music business program and everything, nobody gives you a sheet of this means this and that means that. And, you know, none of this stuff is explained, really. And you see people going through this program with very fundamental misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, at a lower level with bands that are either trying to get started or have been, you know, well established for years or something like that, there are lots of holes in the knowledge. And so to try and help the music industry be a place where artists at any level are more aware and more capable of, you know, helping themselves in the future, the teach a man to fish principle, that's an essential aspect. So that's really what I was looking to do from, you know, the beginning of this decision to start managing other artists.
Fair. Aaliyah, I have a quick follow-up before you go on to your next question. Sorry.
Follow-ups here.
I'm the king of follow-ups today. So what do you think is the biggest hole in knowledge that most bands have mm-hmm. in terms of having it as a business, I guess? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the biggest hole?
Well, you know, in terms of having a band as a business, I think that a lot of bands really aren't ready to switch over into a business style. When they think they are. So that's the first thing, is it really shouldn't be treated as a business until you, until a couple different, you know, areas are met. But in general, some of the holes of the knowledge are, you know, first of all, the difference between a booking agent, a manager, a PR agency, and a record label. These kinds of things, because in multiple sectors of the industry, so both booking and promotion and label, there's the term promotion being used. And a show promoter is very different than a PR company. And, mm-hmm. you know, a label's in-house PR company is very different than the in-house promoter for a large venue. So, there are these kinds of misunderstandings that I think happen, as well as, you know, if you read like an official show offer, even for a local show or something like that, you won't necessarily know, okay, well, what's this percentage that's being taken out for that, and why is that the case in this instance? So there, we could get pretty intricate with this, but really just that way of thinking that is like, ask the questions that you have and somebody will explain them, and ask them to somebody else as well, because you will probably get two different answers, and then you put that into the experience and you start to work with that. It's really, it's something that you have to invest in more in the mindset than in the actual knowledge itself. So
fair. Let me refollow that one up one more time. Sorry, Leah. So what is one thing that you think bands should know that is absolutely essential if they're trying to take the pro?
Everybody in the band should participate in every decision. You know, having multiple minds, four or five, six minds, all contributing to one decision, and every decision efficiently is way better than one or two people making that decision.
You've got to be coordinated then.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, Leah, I'm done my follow-ups.
All good. Very good questions. Yeah. So what do you think has been the most exciting part of starting this company?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, I guess so. My co-manager at this company, his name is Paul, and he's been working with me in the Spires internal management for a long time. He suggested using my last name plus artist management as the name of the agency, which I was opposed to at first, but I couldn't think of anything else, and I think that it's kind of nice now. But I guess the most exciting aspect is really to have something that that I can use to represent this part of myself, because I've worked so much on my reputation as a musician, and throughout time I've noticed people ask me business questions, people seem to want to talk with me about this kind of stuff anyway. So to have some sort of actual physical entity, in a way, maybe not physical, but a separate entity for this sort of thing, is a very exciting concept, because now that it's started, it can grow the same way that my musicianship can grow, or Spires can grow, or something like that. It's established, and it'll just continue to blossom. So
nice.
Yeah.
So what would you say has been the biggest challenge for getting the company off the ground?
Well, the bands that we have on the roster are amazing. They're extremely supportive. They're at a variety of different levels and have a variety of different genre influences and that sort of thing. They've been like family this whole time too. They're really fantastic people and great to work with. I think one of the biggest challenges is trying to balance everything now, because as I'm gearing up for the Dragon Force tour, and making sure that logistics and the tour managing aspects for Spires are done, I'm working every day on practicing the set, singing and playing and this kind of thing, and tending to 5, 6, 7, 8 bands that are, whether public or not, we do tend to other artists in a less official kind of way. So keeping all of that afloat and maintaining discipline on my part to make sure that I'm able to service everybody in the way that they deserve and the way that I is kind of my standard. That's been a big challenge, because since 2020, I've never worked harder in my life than these last couple of years. And this is a whole new year of I've never worked harder in my life. I'm doing it very healthily, and I'm very happy about the way it's going. But it is a challenge to continue to maintain these aspects. And I'm looking forward to that time when it just clicks and I feel like, okay, yes, I've got it, this is it, and I can keep doing it. So
hopefully there's that time. I don't know if there's ever the perfect time, but hopefully.
yeah it's never perfect. No,
let me ask you this. So then, how, maybe this is a dumb question, but how, like, when you go on tour and stuff, how are you going to managing like the 9 people? I mean, like, you said you got a co-manager, but like, mm-hmm. how does one kind of juggle all that, because that must be tough, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I guess the main thing is that like every week, when I'm not on the road, we have like weekly meetings and stuff like that, and just touch base. And doing that via email is just as well, really. there's a lot less of the conversational aspects, which I do think are essential to our formula here, is actually just being able to talk with the bands and both sides asking questions and having discussions. But we've been working with our current roster so much, that I think just doing emails these next couple months, we'll be able to cover a lot of ground and still maintain the development. I used to be, one of the primary drivers on tour, but luckily this time, this is crazy. So luckily this time, we've got somebody who's hired on as exclusively as a driver. So I'll be able to sit in the RV and, at my laptop and enjoy myself, just as I would anywhere else. So this is a really good thing. And I think that that's what's going to, be able to keep things moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to drive, my God.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's one major difference. But what are some other major differences between your previous tours and this upcoming one with Dragon Force?
Well, that's an awesome question. The three U.S. and Canada tours that we've done in the past were all from the Solvay cycle, and we haven't toured Emerald Seas, we haven't toured Gods of Debauchery. So this is huge because literally every time we come together as a band, because we're all in different parts of the country, but even if it's a couple months apart, like right now, we saw each other in preparation for the New Year's Eve show that we did. And I know that rehearsals start, I think everybody flies in on Tuesday. And I know that as soon as I see everybody and we start to pick up our instruments, I'm going to be like, who are you guys? Because we all really grow as musicians every single time. That we reconvene. And so I think that that's a huge testament to what we're going to be doing here on this tour, because it's been 2 years. It's been a long time. There have been two albums that have gone by. And, so this is really, really a fundamentally special tour for us in that sense. This is my first tour doing backing vocals, which is something I always wanted to do. And I didn't write the bass parts with that in mind, so it gets kind of Geddy Lee at times, but that's okay. And, so there are those aspects, but then also the fact that our fan base has grown so much, and people in general, because of the last 2 years, have really wanted a different sense of connection, or have just felt that lacking so much, that I think there will be a really different exchange of energy than there has been in the past.
I'm very excited to go to the Chicago tour date. So it's going to be a good tour. And Gods of Debauchery was my top album last year.
Oh, thank you. That's great news. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So then moving back to the management question, and you kind of touched on this a little bit before, but when and why should a band start seeking outside management, or should they at all?
Well, yeah, the only time you want to begin working with anybody else, whether it's a manager or a record label or anything like this, you only want to bring people in to do something that you can't do yourself. So whether the constraint is time or whether the constraint is a base of connections, those are usually the two primary constraints for bands. So once you reach a point where you're capped and you say, hey, we need somebody who's in the office to maintain the strategic aspects, and is able to organize things differently, is able to plan and really help us accomplish our goals so that we can continue to focus on making sure that each album is better than the last, that kind of thing, which is what a band should be doing. There's that point for each band when they get capped in that sense, or really when it comes to connections and stuff like that. If you're a band that's been doing things for a long time and maybe just haven't met the right people, or don't know how to find the right people or the right resources or something like that, this is a point where somebody who has more experience or is just kind of capable of reaching out from a different perspective that's not just a band perspective, this is another great reason to hire management. So
my question says something slightly different, but I'm going to retailer. So why do you think a band would reach out to, or how do I want to phrase this? So a lot of bands will try to get a manager too early. Yeah. So why do you think that is? Is it just because, like you said, lack of connections or not knowing or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, an expectation that I always try to mitigate is the fact that, you know, we can't work miracles and we can't really do things that, you know, just because I personally have done certain things doesn't mean that every band that I work with or every musician that I work with will also be able to do the same things. Everybody has their own path and that sort of thing. And I think that, you know, sometimes a band will bring not just a manager, but somebody else onto their team, whether it be a record label or something like that, with some sort of idea that's not, you know, coherent with what their current trajectory is. So if you're a band that hasn't even released your first album yet or something like that, no, you shouldn't contact the largest metal record labels in the world for a deal. But, you know, and because they're not going to say get in the limo and yeah, and you know you're going on tour. There, it's you know, if you hear back from them, it will be something that you know will be a lot different than a band that has a, you know, a 7 album back catalog and is working on their 8th, and you know maybe has a similar level of success, but has that, you know, there. So there's a lot of case by case stuff, but at the end of the day, expectations of, you know, working with a team member that is a long term investment. Anybody you bring on to work with is a long term investment, and I think that part, it can get lost on people sometimes.
So we only got a couple minutes left. I want to do one final question, but and then Aaliyah can do hers. But what kind of expectations do you have when you're looking to manage a band? Like, what are you looking for? Like, if a band want when you're trying to get a new client, like, what are you actually looking for personally?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a really good question. I think
sales, obviously, but like, you know, I mean, obviously like the sales numbers, but like, what do you want yourself in a band?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of investment in the musicianship. I think that, if each band member is somebody that really seems to be, focused primarily on growing their skills and, you know, whether that their skills are with their instrument or with songwriting or production, whatever it is, if they seem like they really want to continue skill building for the sake of their music and their craft, that's a huge thing for us. So there's that. If they seem like they're a unit, if they seem like they're a family, you know, and it doesn't have to be like everybody's happy, but it, you know, even if they have good conversations amongst themselves and sometimes the difficult stuff is coming out right in front of us, this is a great sign, because that means that you've got people that are bringing different things into the conversation and everybody's able to handle it well. So that dynamic is also huge. You know, I guess other than that, something, you know, I don't want to overvalue social media, but a social media presence that's unique. I think that some bands or some individuals that are in bands tend to really use social media as a place to represent themselves, first of all, represent themselves how they want to, but to connect with whoever it is that's their audience in a way that you would connect with, you know, with your friends or with people that are really interested, and because they are. And so I think that that's important, in, of course, in the modern era, to really use social media as a place not to do what you think you should do, but to just put yourself out there and to, you know, grow in that sense. So.
And I would imagine also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, though, but it would also be you'd want a band that's more self-sufficient than just relying on you completely to do all the work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. That's huge, is you know, this kind of thing. While we are the guy in the office kind of thing, we're not miracle workers, and it is a long-term investment and very much you adding a member of the team and not just a service of do it and that's it, you know. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Aaliyah, you good for a final question?
Sure. I have it as a fun question. I'm not sure how fun it is given the content, but you mentioned on your, I love your guys' website, you have your little individual pages with all your favorite things. And you mentioned that one of your favorite books is The Road.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like it compares with the film? And would you recommend people who like the film to read the book?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is a great question. I totally didn't see this coming. That's awesome. I love that book because it's such a it was one of the only books that really hit me like that. It was really profound and a really special thing. I would recommend to anybody who's seen the movie to read the book because I think the movie was really fantastic, but it didn't, at least for me, it didn't quite put me there the same way. I think there was almost too much detail, whereas in the book, the use of punctuation was even, very scant and this sort of thing. I mean, that book is in itself the essence of nothing, whereas I think in the movie there were things that, of course, it had to look like a movie. So that I would suggest reading it, but you got to be ready for it. So
Oh, sure.
yeah.
I don't know if I was ready for the movie when I saw the movie, but I
Yeah,
got
the movie's pretty crazy too. So
it.
yeah.
Any final words, any final things you want to share with our listeners?
I'm very grateful to be on this podcast with you both. This has been a pleasure, and Seven Spires will be touring with Dragon Force from March through April, and you can buy tickets for the North American and for the North American shows on dragonforce.com, and we look forward to seeing you at a show.
Pleasure is ours, Peter. And everyone, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.